thank you for joining us for this local history program on Lake Macquarie local history as we travel on past and present transport.
They used to use a horse and sulkies because there were no cars, and that was the way of getting around. Otherwise, you could walk.
Vehicles were all horse-drawn stuff, and when the council was formed, that's around about the 1905. Horse-drawn, that was the most, and push bikes.
What about hansom cabs? Were there any hansom cabs around?
Yes, there were, and they used to run from Newcastle to come out here on very emergent cases. Well, that would take in up to 2.5 to 3 hours to come out and 3 hours to go back.
Of course, coming down from Newcastle, that could have been quite a precarious sort of journey on some of those old roads.
Yes, well, the roads were bad then. In fact, there were only a couple of roads, and that was come out of Newcastle, out of New Lambton Heights, and you had to go up to Adamstown at the Glebe to get up there, up those hills, and that was the main road at those days. In the early days, transport was done by horse buses. They used to cart the mail from Newcastle by horses. McAuliffe was the yard at that time in Watt Street that had the horse-drawn vehicles.
Albert Hawkins and Phyllis Dempsey commenting on early transport.
Us people had horses. As a matter of fact, I can recollect how Mr. Hawkins, Mr. George Hawkins, the man who started this business here, I can remember him to the finish driving a horse and dray, and after he retired, he drove a horse and sulky until he died.
I wonder how many people would have had a sulky in those days. Was it a prestige thing to have a sulky, or did everyone
have it? Well, it was a prestige to have either a buggy or a phaeton. Well, a buggy, as a rule, had a seat in front and a seat behind. The driver sat in front. In a phaeton, the seats faced each other. And they were pulled by one horse only, but that was the prestige part of transport in those days.
The horse was the power for most transport, even the early trams, prior to steam coming into use. George Dury again.
Well, it was just more or less an open frame with a roof on it and seats across. Very little protection from the weather. Yes, certainly some from overhead, but not a lot from the side. They stopped the tram altogether at one stage from Fassie Fern, and the suburban trains finished here at Turralba. And a horse bus, ran from Toronto to Turralba to meet up with the trains. And that went on for quite a number of years.
We go back to 1890, and Ernie Clack recalls the transport of his childhood.
The earliest transport was in the 1890s. When the Excelsior Land Company built the hotel in 1887, which was the first permanent building in Toronto. Previous to that, there was the missionary station, which was built there in about 1830, and it was on the site which Threkel called Ebenezer. The Excelsior Land Company built it, the hotel, in 1887, and they put in a request to the government of the day in 1889 asking permission to build a tram line from Fassie Fern to Toronto, realising that the railway line was being completed through from Sydney up to Waratah. They got permission, but the government stipulated that it must be standard gauge, that it was 4'8½". That it must be built to carry normal trains, and the government reserved the right to use that line on weekends and public holidays.
I understand, sir, there was some controversy about the naming of that particular transport. It couldn't be called a train, it had to be called a tram, didn't it?
Toronto Tramways.
And it had to be called a tram?
Yeah.
What did the tram look like?
Just one little like a box on wheels, four wheels, seats back, four seats, one facing out the back way and the other one the back way facing inwards, and one at the front facing inwards, and the one at where the driver and a couple of passengers sat was facing to the front. And that came into being in 1891. And the first engine was engine number 29, which three of them had been imported from England for use on the Windsor-Richmond line, and the company, the tramway company, bought one that was called number 29, only a small pannier tank engine. And later on they obtained the coffee pot and the pygmy. The pygmy ended its life in one of them, at Gninnons, it was sold to Gninnons, and then one of the coal mines acquired it.
One popular form of transport was the coffee pot, Danny Harrington and Ernie Clack recall.
Well, I really couldn't describe it. I mean, other than say that it was just, it was like a coffee pot or something like that. It was a real old-fashioned box carriage, you know.
The coffee pot, which was a perpendicular boiler set on four wheels with more modifications done to it, and it had a rather high funnel on it, and it was nicknamed coffee pot, which stuck to it for the rest of its life. In those days, the coal mine at Coal Point was operating, and coal was brought up to Toronto, and they had a loading place there at just near the wharf where the coal was stacked on for use on the for the tramway purposes. The line, in the course of about 8 to 10 years, it was that popular that over 300,000 people were carried on that line. At times it was very hectic, and especially on Boxing Day, New Year's time, there'd be 26 local trains from Newcastle would be coming out, no signals. I had to have men on the track to let them through to see there's nothing coming from Passyfern down the line when one wanted to come up, etc. And but there was never the only accident we know of that killed a cow.
In 1915, Albert Hawkins purchased his first motor truck. It could travel at 15 miles an hour. A big difference today.
I got an international truck, that's the first one, early 1915, just when war was declared, and 1914 and 1915. Yes, it was a two-cylinder job, carried 25 underweight, 1.5 ton underweight.
Your father had a Studebaker car.
Yes, he bought the first car that was in Holmesville. He went to town one day, and he went to A.E. Moore's, which was the bicycle place that he dealt with. And he had the bicycle shop in Holmesville, and he dealt with A.E. Moore, and A.E. Moore said, "I've got something out here to show you, Jack." And he took him out and showed him the Studebaker, and Dad drove it home.
Well, they were, had a running board, as I can remember them, and wooden spokes. And I can remember coming from school with three or four other lads about opposite where the lawnmower place is now in Victory Parade. A chap had got a flat tyre. Of course, the tyres were had a large diameter, but very narrow across the width. And he was pumping one up. He invited the boys, of course, to try their expertise to pump the tyre for him, which we did. Of course, there wasn't any reward. We just did it for the fun of it.
When you purchased petrol, it wasn't a case of filler up. You bought 2 4-gallon tins in a wooden box.
Petrol and kerosene were all sold in that manner.
Two tins to a box.
That's right. That's right. You've seen the old kerosene box, haven't you? Yeah. Two tins in a box. That's correct.
8 gallons of petrol. How long would that last you?
Look, I've forgotten now, but you did not run very far. I recollect going from here to Newcastle in those early days, In a motor car, you'd nearly be certain to have one or two punctures between here and Newcastle. There was no tired roads or anything of that nature. And the tyres were high-pressure tyres, around about 80 or 85 pounds per square inch. And they go, you've got punctures everywhere. You always carry two or three spare tyres.
So you'd make frequent stops to change tyres?
Very often, very, very often, yes. That's very true.
Frank Wrightson takes us back to the steam trains.
Well, the steam trains, but I knew them were the S-class, the tank class, and they remained like that until, what, somewhere, be about the early 70s, I'd say.
One important means of transport is for the sick and injured. The ambulance service. Wilfred Dews.
The ambulance, my brother was killed in 1917. And he was killed on the pit top. And a chap, T.C. Frith, who was going around on his horse for orders, saw him lying there waiting for the ambulance to come out from Wall's End Hospital, which was a horse-driven ambulance owned by the hospital. He thought, well, that's not good enough for 1917. We must get our own ambulance. Called a public meeting under Frith's at Bullaroo, and from there the New South Wales ambulance was started.
This is the ambulance. The Sulphide had the ambulance. No ambulance or nothing around. No motor brawn or nothing. They used to have a horse, a light horse they used to get, and he'd go up to the Sulphide, bring the ambulance down and take these people into Wall's End Hospital, a little cottage hospital they called it, just a one room, one flat with just a veranda on the front, and everybody was packed in it.
And that's where a lot of that the so-called flu people had taken. And that was a real starting of the ambulance around the place. The Bullaroo ambulance started with that and other things. And I became a board member of that for many, many years. And also in the hospital, I became a member of the hospital. I was in hospital for some 30-odd years.
Albert Hawkins and Mrs. Copus commenting in this local history program as we looked at local transport. For further information on local transport, contact your local library.